HD Smartcast.
You are listening to an HD Smartcast original.
Welcome back to a fresh new season of Health Charcha. I am Deepti Ahuja, podcast producer, HD Smartcast, and your host and dost on this podcast, where we will discuss all of the burning health-related questions you, my dear listener, might have in mind. So, let's begin. No one's been able to play the Hulk the way Mark Ruffalo does, no? But did you know that just like his fictional character Bruce Banner, Mark Ruffalo too suffered a tough, dark past? Almost two decades ago, Ruffalo dreamt that he had a brain tumor, which after CT scans was diagnosed to be true. During that time, he was on the verge of becoming a dad and his career was at its peak. Post-surgery, the left side of his brain was paralyzed. He lost hearing in one of his ears. The medication would make him wonky. In short, the road to recovery was long, strenuous, and extremely painful. But he made it. He came back as the strongest Avenger. His journey has been incredible indeed. However, to be honest, I don't think Mark Ruffalo would have been able to survive without the support of his family, timely treatment of the right kind, and the understanding of the disease he suffered from, and his will to not let go. In this series, we will try and extend support by sharing as much information and empathy as possible, so that just in case you or your loved one is suffering from a brain tumor, you at least don't feel alone on this journey. So, on this episode, we have with us Dr. Amitabh Chando. He's a senior consultant and lead neurosurgeon in R.N. Tagore Hospitals and Narayana Health, Kolkata. He will introduce us to the basics of brain tumor. Hi, Dr. Chando. How are you?
I am perfectly fine. How are you?
I'm good too. It's a little difficult to pronounce your name in the right way, Dr. Chando.
You don't have to.
But I want to. So anyway, doctor, what is brain tumor? Could you explain that to us in layperson language, please?
A brain tumor is like just a mass or growth of abnormal cells in your brain. Although typically brain tumor means it's from the core of the brain, there's a brain parenchyma. That's a, in common man's language, I would say, it's a meat of the brain. But any tumor arising from the meat of the brain or the coverings of the brain or the nerves arising from the brain or even the surrounding bones of the brain are grouped into as brain tumors. There are many different types of brain tumors. Some brain tumors are benign or in layman's language, I would say it's non-cancerous. And some are malignant or cancerous.
Right.
These brain tumors means can occur at any age. No age is immune. And the exact cause, we really do not know. There are multiple hypotheses. Family history and some high-dose X-rays are possible risk factors for some brain tumors.
So what are the symptoms of brain tumor which can help indicate, you know, a need for diagnosis? I mean, Ruffalo dreamt his brain tumor but we don't have that kind of instinct, right?
Look, brain tumor can have multiple symptoms or even it can be asymptomatic. I mean, sometimes it happens that a CT scan or MRI is done for completely different reason and incidentally we pick up a brain tumor. These are asymptomatic brain tumors. So by and large, the commonest symptom of brain tumor is headache. It's present in about 70% of the patients with brain tumor. But it also means that 30% will not have any headache. So headache is not invariable in brain tumors. So a lot of patients may have brain tumors, but do not have any headache. The other symptoms it can have seizure or convulsion. Does it mean that any patient having a seizure has a brain tumor. No, no, it's not like that. Like in, we see a lot of children or adolescents suffering from epilepsy. They're having seizure for quite some time, but they do not have brain tumor. When do you suspect brain tumor? If the first time seizure is happening at or after the age of 30. This is very suspicious. Or the type of seizure is changing. The parents will come and tell that, doctor, my child was having this kind of seizure. Recently, the type of seizure has changed. The pattern of seizure has changed. Patient might have dimness of vision, visual problems, difficulty in seeing, might have double vision, might have numbness of face, might have weakness of face, hearing problems, balance problems, weakness of hands and legs, and difficulty in speaking, problems in memory, and problems in swallowing, and even some hormonal problems can be caused by brain tumors. That doesn't mean that any symptom you're having is brain tumor. These symptoms can happen in other diseases as well. So it is the judgment of the doctor, clinician, who is seeing the patient to decide whether he would suspect brain tumor.
Coming to the doctor, you know, let's say our listener or their loved ones, you know, they're suspecting that something's not right, that, you know, these kind of symptoms are occurring over and over again, and probably in combination. What happens next in the diagnosis stage? How does, you know, the doctor to whom they've gone for consultation, how do they examine a brain tumor and declare that that might be the case?
In today's world, the gold standard investigations of any brain tumor is contrast enhanced MRI. So just plain MRI is not enough. If the patient is financially seriously challenged, we can do at some subsidized rate, or even if we can't do an MRI at all, then at least get a contrast enhanced CT scan. Sometimes both MRI and CT scans are needed. So MRI will diagnose a tumor. There is a tumor. There are other investigations as well, which will lead us knowing the exact nature of the tumor or surgical planning. But so far, till date, contrast enhanced MRI is the gold standard of an investigation.
Right. Any other kind of examinations that are done generally to detect a brain tumor, or is it just CMRI?
It's MRI, contrast enhanced MRI. There are sometimes when we are not very sure whether it's a tumor or not, it could be tuberculosis, it could be tumor or some other disease. Sometimes, a stroke which is a few weeks old may be confused with the tumor in contrast MRI. So we do a study called MRI spectroscopy. So that will help us that whether it's a tumor or it is something else. Sometimes we need an angiogram to know what is the, is it an aneurysm or it's a tumor, or how vascular is the tumor. Angiogram is also needed to plan the surgical treatment, means what important blood vessels are involved in with the tumor. Some kinds of special sequence MRI is needed to plan the treatment, like functional MRI, MRI tractography, navigation protocol MRI. These are all done to plan the treatment.
Interesting. Dr. Chando, once it is certain that, you know, one is suffering from brain tumor, how does one go about the treatment then? Like, what happens next?
Good question. There are multiple levels of treatment. Sometimes to assure the listeners, there are some tumors where you don't do anything. Suppose there is a patient who has some injury to the head, and we get a CT scan, and we come to know that he has a small brain tumor. It's entirely asymptomatic. And from our experience, we gathered that this is a most likely a benign tumor. Small benign tumor, it's a slow growing tumor. We often do not do anything. Just keep him under observation. Maybe at regular intervals, we get an MRI done to see whether the tumor is increasing. If there is an increase in the size of the tumor, then we intervene. By and large, the main treatment of any brain tumor is mostly operative treatment, surgical treatment. There are other modalities of treatment, like in some radiations. These days, the radiations have come a long way. There are some fractionated radiation, like radiosurgery. The stereotactic radiosurgery is a radiation treatment. There is only one type of tumor which is treated with medication. That is a tumor in the arising from the pituitary gland, is a prolactinoma, which is primarily treated with medication, not by surgical treatment. But by and large, surgical intervention is needed for brain tumor.
You know, while researching about brain tumor, we came across this thing called neuronavigational system for brain tumor biopsy. Now, I don't know what that means. Could you explain?
Neuronavigation is just like when we drive our car. These days we have GPS navigation system, right? It's like that. Navigation is one of the modern advancement in the treatment of brain tumors. There are a number of other modern advancements, but navigation is definitely one of them. Sometimes navigation will tell you exactly where the tumor is. What is the benefit of knowing it? We can reduce the size of the cut. So if we know from the surface of the head that the tumor is right here, so we know that we make a small incision and it will be very precise. If you do not have navigation, there will be some margins of error. So we tend to make a larger incision and a larger bony opening.
So is it like how laparoscopy works? Is it kind of like that?
No, laparoscopy in the belly, it is that we insert a scope, endoscope, and see the whole belly. Endoscopy is also used in brain surgery. So I'm coming to the navigation. First, we can plan the whole thing that we know exactly from the surface of the head. From the surface, we don't see the tumor, right? If we do a navigation, you practically see where is the tumor from the surface. And there are some trajectories. We use natural passages to reach the tumor. We don't want to damage the eloquent or the functioning brain tissue. So we try to take the thoroughfare which will have the least damage to the brain to reach the tumor. So navigation will guide us that way. Sometimes we use the nostrils to reach the brain because the roof of the nose is same as the floor of the brain. So it's like two rooms in the first floor and the second floor. So brain is lying in in the second floor and nose is the first floor room. So if there is something in the floor of the second floor, if I make a hole in the roof of the first floor, I can reach the floor of the second floor without disturbing the content of the second floor.
This is so that's graphic. And actually very, very helpful. Thank you. I mean, I couldn't understand.
And during operation, navigation helps like a GPS system. So like you, when you're driving, it says that you go 200 meters straight, then turn right, then 300 meters, then turn left, like this. The navigation, what happens, it's a real-time image. We are exactly seeing, suppose there is a tumor, just behind the tumor, there is a very important blood vessel of the brain or a very important nerve of the brain. So when we're working inside the tumor, we are not very sure that how far is the blood vessel or how far is the nerve. So when we are in the tumor, we tend to be very bold because tumors doesn't have any functioning tissue. Inside the tumor, we can be very aggressive. But at the interface of the normal brain or the blood vessel in the tumor, we have to be very careful. Little bit movement here and there can cause a serious and irreversible damage and even death.
Oh, which is why this kind of technology is actually very, very important.
Yeah, exactly. So when I'm very close to that important structure, so the navigation will tell me that I'm very close to that structure. So you better be careful. Like in the newer Mercedes, you have that automatic brake system.
Yeah, I was about to get to automatic cars.
Yeah, it's an automatic brake system that it will warn you that this important structure is there. So it's really handy. When we insert a ventricular peritoneal shunt, in old days when navigation was not there, the commonest problem with ventricular peritoneal shunt was that malposition of the shunt. The shunt ideally should be positioned like this, but when you do a CT scan after that, it is functioning, but it's not in optimum position. I remember during my residency days, in the night when you used to do the shunt, and the next morning, our professors used to get a CT scan and used to rip us that, how did you manage to put the shunt here? How did you manage to do that? And surprisingly, even the professors, I have seen professors placing the shunt like that. It's an human error because it's a blind procedure. So if you have the navigation, you know, you have that, you can see in the image that where exactly you are placing the shunt.
Makes sense. Radiotherapy, chemotherapy, steroids, anti-seizure medication, all of these things, are they like complementary to surgery or are they also separate treatments that can be availed? You know, of course, now that you've, spoken so much about neuronavigation system, you've spoken about the fact that it is a blind surgery in a lot of ways. I'm also trying to figure out if there are non-surgical ways. And of course, you said that, you know, the only tumor, the one that does not get operated upon is the one that originates from the pituitary gland. But all of these other things.
Not all pituitary gland. It's a one type of pituitary tumor. That's a prolactinoma. That's primarily it is treated with medication.
Right. But all of these other things, other therapies, are they complementary to the surgery or can radiotherapy, chemotherapy, all of these things be used separately?
A good question. Radiotherapy is mostly used in most cases. It's used for malignant tumors. We do a resection. And why do we need a resection? First, let me answer, why do you need surgery? First, we need to know what is the exact nature of the tumor. First, it is whether it's a tumor, number one. If it is a tumor, then what kind of tumor? Is it a benign tumor or a malignant tumor? If it is benign tumor, what kind of tumor? If it's a malignant tumor, then what kind of malignant tumor? And there are gradings of malignant tumors. And accordingly, that we prognosticate, means we predict that this will be the lifespan of this gentleman or the lady, that this is a good tumor or a bad tumor. So malignant tumors, mostly they need some kind of radiation. Primarily, we can give radiation treatment in malignant tumor, which we believe it's a secondary tumor. Secondary cancer, why? What is primary cancer? What is secondary cancer in the brain? In brain, if the malignant tumor is arising from the brain, we call it a primary cancer of the brain. Secondary, if it is arising from any other part of the body, like lung cancer can spread into the brain. Breast cancer can have spread into the brain. So these are secondary tumors. If we know it, patient is having a lung cancer and a small tumor in the brain, which you believe it to be a metastasis, means or the secondary tumor, we usually radiate primarily. Sometimes we know that this is a small benign tumor, and if we go for surgery, surgery can have some morbidities, like can have some paralysis or some cranial nerve involvement. Then alternate treatment is radiosurgery. Although it's called surgery, it's not actually a surgery. It's stereotactic radiosurgery. So they focus on the tumor, very sharp focus and very high dose. So that's a stereotactic radiosurgery. Chemotherapy is again, it's a adjuvant treatment. But so for some tumors like lymphoma, chemotherapy is the primary treatment. We do a biopsy, prove that it is a lymphoma, and then we send the patient to the oncologist. The oncologist give chemotherapy to the patient.
Right. Wow. I mean, different kinds of tumors, different kinds of treatments. Thank you for actually, you know, explaining why we need surgery. Very, very important question that we didn't even think to ask.
Another thing is that another reason what I forgot to tell you, that sometimes, you know, if it's a malignant tumor, we know there is an option. We can take a small tissue biopsy and send the patient for radiation. But sometimes the tumor is big. Radiation will cause initial swelling of the brain. Radiation it's an injury. It's an injury. And any injury will cause some swelling, inflammation. And you know that there will be some swelling in the brain. If there is already a big tumor and there is swelling in the brain, the patient will deteriorate. The patient will become unconscious and even may die. So if we remove that bulk of the tumor, we create a space in the cranial cavity in the head so that if after radiation, if there is some kind of swelling, there is some kind of allowance of the brain to swell up. That is another reason. Sometimes the tumor causes pressure on the critical areas of the brain. So we want to remove the pressure on the critical area of the brain, like patient has paralysis or loss of speech or any other kind of problem, balance problems. So we remove the tumors to relieve the pressure on that part of the brain.
It's so much detail about the treatment. But could you tell us, Dr. Chandra, what causes brain tumor? Now that you've, you know, explained everything in so much detail, we'd really like to know, what are the causes? Is there something that we can save ourselves from these causes?
It's a difficult thing for the brain tumor. We know about lung cancer. If we avoid smoking, we can reduce the chance of brain tumor. And there are some other environmental factors. We know that this cancer is a chance of this cancer is increased if we do this, if we do that, so avoid these things. But for brain tumor, brain cancer, really we do not know. But I don't want to go through the tumorigenesis of the brain tumors. It's a very complicated thing. But for ease of understanding, I will say that we have millions of cells in our body. And these cells multiply. In some part of the body, some cells do not multiply at all. Some cells multiply very slowly. Some cells multiply very fast. Like cells on the surface of the skin, they multiply very every day. We are shedding some cells, dead cells, and new cells are growing. Same thing in the intestinal epithelium, this lining of the intestine. The cells multiply very rapidly, but brain cells do not multiply. After a certain stage, they do not multiply. Liver cells multiply in exceptional situations. Muscle cells hardly multiply. Cardiac cells, they don't multiply that much. So why? Why some cells multiply very quickly or slowly or do not multiply at all? This is controlled by our genetic code. The genetic code sends signals to the cells that you multiply or you don't multiply. You multiply with this speed, you multiply with that speed. So when this genetic code, this signal, this control is lost, there is uncontrolled growth of the tumor cells. These give rise to tumor.
Right, which could be benign or malignant. It depends upon.
Benign or malignant. And when this genetic code alteration can occur, it can occur during our birth or during our lives. What happens? These environmental factors like ultraviolet ray, viral infection. A lot of assaults are going on there.
So basically anything any kind of radiation maybe that can affect gene, right?
Radiation, yes. What happens that in everything, these insulting factors, they tend to damage the coding. And our body system is such that it immediately repairs them. As we grow old, that repairing mechanism starts getting lost. So that ability to repair is gradually losing. So that's why in elderly population, we are having more tumors, more cancers.
Makes so much sense. And I think, I mean, you just took me back to my high school science, and I loved doing this episode with you, Dr. Chondo. Thank you so much for your time. This has been enlightening.
Same. Pleasure.
Brain tumor is most definitely a very tricky illness to deal with. But I hope that after listening to this episode, you, our dear listener, have at least begun to understand the illness that may affect you or your loved one's life one way or another. In the next few episodes, we will talk more about brain tumors, different kinds of surgical options available to treat it, recovery and support. Until then, chin up, yaar. Ye waqt bhi guzar jayega. This is a public awareness initiative supported by Medtronic. Views expressed are independent views of Dr. Amitabh Chondo, intended for general information and educational purposes only, and does not constitute any medical advice. Please consult your physician for any questions or concerns you may have regarding your condition. Doctor makes no recommendations or endorsements of any products or services. That's it for this episode on Health Charcha. If you want to know more about the diseases discussed in this podcast, please initiate a discussion with your physician. To get updates on Health Charcha, follow at HT Smartcast on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, YouTube or LinkedIn. And to listen to more such podcasts, log on to htsmartcast.com or suno Naye Nazariye Se.
This was an HT Smartcast original.
HD Smartcast.